In Job 38, we've heard from Job's friends, we've heard from Job, and now we hear from God. And God has responded along the way. And the question that we have tried to deal with, but it's a big question, is why would God do this? How many of you felt like this answer in these three chapters was for everybody to ask that question? And you know, the answer for those of you that weren't here and weren't able to pick it up through the week, my belief is that this whole book is to teach us not to be so self-righteous. We look at his friends coming in there and telling them how, well, if you'd have just done right, you wouldn't have the trouble you're in. How many of you have ever told that to somebody? I won't look. If you'd have just done right, you wouldn't be where you are. And we know that. Logically, that works. But in this situation, we didn't see what was behind the scenes where God said, you can't shake him. He's mine. He's devoted. He's absolutely sold out to me. He won't betray me. And he was right. But, you know, Job did say, if I've done something, show me what it is. Because he had the same idea that this couldn't happen to somebody that is as righteous as he believed himself to be. How many of you think you're right? We all think we're right. No matter, you know, I don't want to talk about politics, but no matter which side of the aisle you're on in all of this that's going on in our country right now, you think you're right. Well, until your wife tells you you're not, but but we know, we do believe we're right. If we didn't think we were right, if we thought we were wrong, we'd change, right? But Job says, I don't know how this could have happened to me because I have not done anything wrong. And by the way, when we look at his introduction, our introduction to Job in the beginning, the Bible tells us he escheweth evil. That means that it doesn't stick. Like, there's no temptation. You could tempt him with anything. If he'd have been in that garden, he'd still be in that garden, in other words. He would not have been tempted to eat of that fruit because he just loved God. He was devoted to God. He was afraid to sin. He was afraid for his children to sin. That's what we see. You know, one of the problems that we've got is we're not afraid to sin. We don't believe in the judgment of God in this life anymore. We know we're going to heaven, so we don't have to go to hell, so we think we can get away with anything. That's a problem. Because the truth is, we can't. The truth is, there's judgment. But we know the only way, if we would have taken that conversation between Satan and the Lord out of this book, we would have had the same opinion as his friends. And that's a problem. We can't judge people so freely without knowing the whole story. And I can tell you, it's hard to know the whole story. One of those phrases we commonly see says, everybody's going through something, struggling with something, fighting a battle that you don't know about, so just be nice to people. And that's true. Now, they've wronged you. They've mistreated you. They've offended you. And so you feel like you have a right to come back, but you don't know what was going on before that. So we ought to have patience. And we ought to extend grace. Right? God extended it to us. Freely you've received, freely give. But God answers Job here. Look at what it says in verse 1, chapter 38. The Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind. So that presence, that power, he reveals of himself. Look at, we go to Ezekiel, and what do we see? The whirlwind. So this presence of God, Elijah's taken up, we say, a chariot of fire, because that's the description. But as we imagine, as we think about it, it's God reaching down and pulling Elijah, because remember how Moses saw God, he was what? A burning bush. But the bush didn't burn up. Because why? Because it was just the presence of God. It wasn't fire. It was God's glory. Even though Moses saw it as fire. So we see this over and over again. And God answers Job out of the whirlwind. Verse 2, who is this that darkeneth counsel by words without knowledge? Now, I know that none of us in this room have ever said something when we didn't know what we were talking about. Not possible, right? We thought we knew what we were talking about, so we said it. We spoke about it. And sometimes, and I don't recall who I was with the other day, but the conversation kind of went like this. They said, I just needed to say it out loud and kind of work it out. And sometimes that's all we are doing, is trying to work it out. Job's sitting there with his friends, and they're trying to just talk it through, work it out. And like I say all the time, sometimes we think it's a brilliant idea. We think it's an impressive conclusion until we say it out loud or until we talk to somebody about it. And so God says to Job, who is this that darkeneth counsel, right? He's not making people smarter. He's not making people wiser. This conversation is not helping anybody. It's darkening counsel by words without knowledge. Verse 3, gird up now thy loins like a man. I will demand of thee and answer thou me. And God begins to talk about incredible things here. Where wast thou, verse 4, when I laid the foundations of the earth? Declare if thou hast understanding. He said, if you're so smart, if you put yourself on the level with God to have equal knowledge, then tell me, how was the earth made? Verse 5, who has laid the measures thereof, if thou knowest it? Or has stretched the line upon it? In other words, and remember the timing here, back in the days of Abraham. That's how far back we're talking about. How big is the earth? Now, what's that? It's flat, right? So how big is it? We think about the earth and how huge it, and still it's incredible to me that we know what we know. Though we've launched things into space, we didn't, they did, right? Launch things into space. We could take pictures. We got video. We got all this amazing, incredible things that have been done to gain the information that we have to measure the circumference of the earth, to know its depth and width and height. They didn't. But they didn't know. They didn't know. And that's what God's point is. You're so smart. What do you know? And, you know, think about the abortion debate. It's one thing, I heard somebody say this, and it was an incredible statement. He said, look, I used to believe that abortion was as simple as just a medical procedure, and that was it, no big deal. But we've come so far with our technology now that we can see that it's not just a clump of cells. We've come so far, now of course we, just by logic, knew it was more than that. But at what point? Well, now we know when the heart starts beating. I mean, we can track all of that by science and technology. So while there may have been some ignorance at some point about abortion, we can't claim ignorance anymore. It should not be acceptable anywhere. And God is questioning Job, did you put a line on it? You know how big the earth is? Who laid the cornerstone thereof? Verse 7, when the morning stars sang together and the sons of God shouted for joy. Or who shut up the sea with the doors when it breaketh forth as if it had issued out of the womb? When I made the cloud the garment thereof, and thick darkness a swaddling band for it, and break up for it my decreed place, and set bars and doors. So the flood of the earth, the opening of the windows, the doors of heaven, when all of the rain came down, when that envelope of clouds became broken. He said, where were you? What do you know about it? Verse 11, and said, hitherto shalt thou come, but no further, and here shall thy proud waves be stayed. Why does the ocean stop right there? How does it just come back and forth with the waves and the tide along the coast? How is that? How does it work? God said, I did that. Verse 13, that it might take hold of the ends of the earth, that the wicked might be shaken out of it. It is turned as clay to the seal, and they stand as a garment. And from the wicked their light is withholden, and the high arm shall be broken. Hast thou entered into the springs of the sea? Hast thou walked in the search of the depth? Again, how deep is the ocean? How deep is the sea? Now we've got such technology now that we can measure much of that. And yet, a spring in the sea, where does it end? When you go down deeper, where does it go? How deep is it? And God questions Job on it. What is the point? And we're not done yet. This is what two whole chapters are about. What's the point? The point is, we shouldn't question God. The point is that while we may have questions, and while we may ask questions, our confidence should be in God. And by the way, Job's was, but he got real close, didn't he? He got real close to accusing God of breaking his bond, his testimony, his testament. Verse 17, have the gates of death been opened to thee? Hast thou seen the doors of the shadow of death? Hast thou perceived the breadth of the earth? Declare if thou knowest it all. Job, if you're so smart, tell us all about it. These three, four friends had come in and sat with Job, and by their words, and we sit in judgment of them now, right? Job has put himself a little bit higher than they are because they're making accusations that are not true. They're making suppositions that are baseless. And so Job sits there and he's looking and examining his life and trying to figure out why did this happen? God, how did I deserve this? And that's the point. It's not about what we deserve. The struggle in your life is not about what you deserve. The pain in our lives is not about what we deserve. And neither is the grace of God what we deserve. Sometimes things happen that we didn't cause. Sometimes good things. How many of you ever had good things happen that wasn't your fault? And bad things happen that wasn't your fault? And so that's God saying, Job, you don't know everything. You don't know everything. Even though all of these people look up to Job, or had up until they thought he had some secret sin. Right? Because of Romans 8:28, right? Right. And he can use it all if we'll let him. Look at verse 22. Hast thou entered into the treasures of the snow? Hast thou seen the treasures of the hail? Now, how many of you have ever seen a snowflake, a tiny snowflake, magnified? Or a piece of sand, a grain of sand magnified? Or I saw this week a picture of an ant, the face of an ant magnified. Incredible. And all by design. Think about that snowflake, and I'm talking about real snowflakes, ice that falls out of the sky. And when you look at that snowflake and how it formed, and yet how beautiful it is, how elegant it is. And God says, do you know how to make that? Do you know how to do that? Do you know the treasure of the snow, or the treasure of the hail which I reserved against the time of trouble, against the day of battle and war? By what way is the light parted which scatters the east wind upon the earth? I mean, think about the creation of God is so wonderful. And yet, the Bible says the firmament declares his handiwork, right? The stars. I mean, how many of you ever look at the stars during the day? But they're there, aren't they? The stars don't disappear during the day. You just can't see them because of the light. And yet when the darkness is, when the earth is away from the sun on our side, we can look out and see the stars. But it's just because that all that brightness has been taken away, but they were there the whole time. God did that. God created all of that. He designed all of that. He could have just talked about the human body and how wonderful the works of humanity are. The heart, the way it beats, and the lungs, the way they work, and the cells, the way they work, and all of these organs that we have that God put together so that it all functions. And your brain, how about that? God made that. God designed that. It was God's idea to have that. Eyes. Yet he uses all of the other things that he's created. The depth of the sea, the waves, the rivers, the snow, the hail, all of that, which is complicated and incredible. Look at what he says in verse number 26. To cause it to rain on the earth where no man is, on the wilderness wherein there is no man, to satisfy the desolate and waste ground, cause the bud of tender herbs to spring forth. Hath the rain a father? Who hath begotten the drops of dew? God says, even when you're not around and there's nobody to tell the earth what to do, I'm in charge of all that. Now, obviously, God set the solar system and the environment of the earth into its course. Right? God doesn't tell it every raindrop to fall. But he set up the system that causes it. And he says it rains when nobody's around. It rains when it's not going to benefit any human. Verse 29, out of whose womb come the ice and the hoary frost of heaven? Who hath gendered it? Waters are hid as with a stone, and the face of the deep is frozen. Canst thou bind the sweet influences of Pleiades or loose the bands of Orion? Now we're talking about what? The stars. Now we're talking about astronomical constellations. Things that God says, I put them there. Not just that, but look at, canst thou bring forth Maseroth in his season, or canst thou guide Arcturus with his sons? Again, constellations. And God's talking, look, the depth of the sea and the stars of the sky and everything in between. Rain, oceans, all of that. Verse 34, canst thou lift up thy voice to the clouds that abundance of waters may cover thee? I mean, God questions the ability of rainmakers, right? Can you make it rain? Nobody in here? Can you make it rain or what? Verse 35, canst thou send lightnings that they may go and say unto thee, here we are. Now again, God designed the system. It's not that the ecosystem is, micromanaged by God. It's not that he's up there doing every little lightning bolt or tornado or raindrop. But his point is, he made it. How many of you have to remind yourself to breathe? And when you wake up in the morning, do you have to remind your heart to beat today? That's how God made it, to function naturally. He made it that way. And we can't order it. We don't have control over it. Verse 36. Who has put wisdom in the inward parts? Or hath given understanding to the heart? There it is. When you eat, do you have to talk your digestive system all the way through it? Okay, chew, swallow. Okay, stomach, do your thing. Do you have to tell it to? No. Just works. Because that's how God made it. The same way he designed all of this. I'm not going to go there. Verse chapter 39. Remember the cycles. And we're working our way around. We've been through drought. We've been through floods, famine, pestilence. We've been through all of that in history, in cycles. And eventually it's going to come back around, and that's going to be the end. Climate change. Climate changes. Climate adjustments. It's all part of it. So he's talked about the human body. He's talked about the solar system. He's talked about the oceans, the snow, the rain, the lightning. And now he begins to look at animals. So here are some things that no doubt we can't control, right? We know we can't control it. So what's something we think we can control? What's something through time that we've learned that we can tame and manage? Animals. So he goes there. And he says, so you think you're good at managing other things, other species. And he begins to talk about that in verse number 9. Will the unicorn with his band and the furrow, canst thou bind the unicorn with his band and the furrow, or will he harrow the valleys after thee? Now there in the Bible is the term unicorn. And wouldn't Chloe be so excited? Until she figured out it was a rhinoceros. Because a rhinoceros is not very glorious, is it? And yet the hide on a rhino is incredible. The strength of a rhino. How many of you have rhinos at home that you've tamed to plow the field? So even the tasks that we take on to train and to manage, even those things. Go back to those days of Abraham. What did they have? Oxen, cattle, goats, sheep. He said, why don't you try a little harder? Why don't you go for something a little bigger? And what he's saying, again, like Brother Ronnie said, God is exposing Job's limitations. Verse 11, wilt thou trust him because his strength is great? Wilt thou leave thy labor to him? Wilt thou believe him that he will bring home thy seed and gather it to thy barn? I mean, you're going to hook him up to the cart, a rhino? What do you think a rhino would do if you hooked him up to a cart? He'd drag it till it came off, wouldn't he? Well, if I got a baby rhino, I could train it, I'm sure. Only one thing about a baby rhino, he's a rhino. And there's that natural instinct that he has. Verse 13, gavest thou the goodly wings to the peacocks, or wings and feathers to the ostrich, which leaves her eggs in the earth and warms them in the dust and forgets that the foot may crush them, or that the wild beast may break them? She is hardened against her young ones as though they were not hers. Her labor is in vain without her, without fear. Look, as she leaves them, she just leaves them. And God says, you know, looking at that, it looks like the ostrich doesn't care. But what is it? It's a natural course. It's a natural course. And so what we can't understand, even in other species around us, God made them that way. God designed them that way. You know, Sister Sheila's got a farm, right? And she was posting pictures this week of the goats that were born. Oh, two were born. Two more were born. Two more were born. And so she got goats everywhere. The goat lady. Now, and that's something that I know several in the church have had goats along the way. I know we did. But I know that there are those occasions where the mama will push that baby away and refuse it. But you know, there were goats being born and surviving birth without farmers for a long time. and chickens and every other, without us trying to manage them. And yet, once they've become ours, we take such responsibility and we think we can make a difference. And God is telling Job, Job, there's a limit to what you can do. There is a natural course. And it's important for us to remember that. You know, even when it comes to our lives and our relationships, when it comes to your life, doctors can do amazing things today that they couldn't do 5 years ago. And they can save lives and extend lives, and even with the high quality of life. I was reading something yesterday or the day before where they were talking about putting people in oxygen chambers and like 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, and it restores their youthfulness. How many of y'all want to get some? Amen. Restores their youthfulness, cures them, you know, all oxygen. And so they talk about that. But let me tell you something. At some point, no matter how much oxygen, how many surgeries, how many mechanical devices the doctors can put in us and surgically repair us, at some point, we're going to die. There's a limit. There is a limit. Even with all of our advances, there is a limit. Verse 17, God has deprived her of wisdom, neither hath he imparted to her understanding. Again, we're talking about the ostrich. What time she lifted up herself on high, she scorneth the horse and his rider. Hast thou given the horse strength? Hast thou clothed his neck with thunder? Canst thou make him afraid as a grasshopper? The glory of his nostrils is terrible. He paws in the valley and rejoices in his strength. He goes on to meet the armed men. He mocketh at fear and is not affrighted, neither turneth he back from the sword. The quiver rattleth against him, and the glittering spear and the shield. He swalloweth the ground with fierceness and rage. Neither believeth he that it is the sound of the trumpet. He saith among the trumpets, ha ha. He smelleth the battle afar off, and the thunder of the captains and the shouting. And so think about a horse. And all the strength of a horse. And it's amazing. Yet we've tamed them, right? Brother Al told me at some point we had gotten horses. He made a saddle for Kendra and we were talking about horses. And he said, I don't ride horses anymore. And by the way, he was a horseman. He said, they don't have steering wheels or brakes. And he was right, they don't. But we've tamed them to some extent. You can train them. And yet, where did they get their sense for their strength and their lack of fear? God gave it to them. Chapter 40. Moreover, the Lord answered Job and said, shall he that contendeth with the Almighty instruct him? He that reproveth God, let him answer it. God says so, Job. You challenge me on what I've done? Give me some answers. You challenge me on what I've done? Guys, it just does not pay to get mad at God. There's no benefit to that. You may not like the way life is working out, but God is our companion, not our enemy. And we need to trust him through it all. Through it all. Go ahead. No. Okay, which is the answer, which is the question. That is the question. Why did it happen to Job? And so one answer is the lessons that we've learned from it, not to be judgmental as his friends were. But the bottom line, and this, and that is what God is answering Job here. After it happened, he questioned God, why? Basically. After it happened. And God says, who put you in charge? As an example, and understand this. This is the thing. No matter what we go through, we look at Job's life. How long do you think this lasted? I was examining my life for some reason yesterday, just looking back on everything. And I can look at periods of time, and I was calculating, you know, in this year or this 2 years and this. And you know how quickly life changes? How quickly, suddenly? And look at the chapters of our lives, and some of them are, you know, months, and some of them are years, and some of them are many years. Seasons of life. And as Job was questioning God, why did you let this happen to me? Which is the question that you ask. God says, trust me. I'm in control. I know what I'm doing. You don't know what I'm doing. But I'm smarter than you are. Now that sounds like an incredible statement. And maybe as insufficient to satisfy our curiosity. But understand something. Everything Job went through for that period, the outcome was better. And the question is, well, but he lost 10 children. How can that be better? I've counseled people through the years. I've seen what people can go through and what hell we can put our parents through. And I can say that maybe had these children not been taken out, maybe worse would have come. The point is that it was all in God's plan. We need to trust him. We don't know what would have happened down the road. We don't know what kind of lives they would have had. I know one thing, and what did Job say? The thing which I feared the most has come upon me. I know that Job lived in fear every day that his children were going to let God down. Now, let me ask you a question. Do you think that he still had that same fear after he went through all this? I don't think so. I think he learned to let go of some of that worry. The thing which I feared the most has come upon me. And he was stressed out all the time that they were going to do wrong, and God just took them away. Where did they go? Well, they were people of faith. They went to Abraham's bosom. They didn't go to hell. They weren't destroyed. It wasn't judgment. And yet we look at this as punishment and as judgment. It wasn't. It was just part of God's plan. There is no satisfactory answer, though. I mean, really, right? You're not satisfied with that answer. And the ones that asked it 2-3 weeks ago aren't satisfied with that. It's beyond us. But God's answer is, I'm God. That's God's answer. That's his only answer. He says, when you want to know the depth of my mind, tell me how I made the earth. When you want to know the depth of my plans, tell me how to make a snowflake. How to make hailstone. Tell me how to do all that I've done. God says, I'm God. And how many of us have ever said, as a parent, because I said so? Right? Because I said so. I could explain it to a four-year-old, but at some point, she can't conceive the depth of my experience until she's my age, right? And so at some point, I got to look at a four-year-old and say, because I said so. And God goes through all of this explanation with Job. And that's exactly right. When God tries to explain it to us, we come up with excuses. But Lord, but God, why? Why? What? Huh? At some point, we just have to accept because God said so. We cannot know the mind of God. We can study the Word of God. We can tune into the, you know, sync and harmonize with the Holy Spirit of God. We can meditate. We can pray. We can observe. But we still, with all of our experience, with all of our studies, with all of our knowledge, we're not on His level. No. And the Bible says to keep searching. And we grow by that. Right. We'll fall short. And so you know what God does? He looks at us like we look at four-year-olds. And He says, bless your heart. You all know what that means. Job's answer in verse 4, behold, I'm vile. What shall I answer thee? I will lay my hand upon my mouth. Once have I spoken, I will not answer. Yea, twice, but I will proceed no further. Job says, God, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I came so close. I'm sorry that I questioned you. I'm sorry that I doubted you. I know that when we're going through it, we look at God and we say, God, this is not fair. And by the way, most of the time, if we look on our lives, it would have been fair. But we have to understand that the suffering that we go through is not punishment. Maybe it's consequences. But it's not punishment. It's life. We need to trust God. Trust the process. Trust God's plan. He goes on, and I want to just bring out, I know the bell's already rung, but in chapter 41, he talks about Leviathan. He talks about creatures that it's not quickly apparent to us what he's talking about. Behemoth. And so is Behemoth a hippopotamus or an elephant? Or a dinosaur? Leviathan, is it a whale? Is it a crocodile? Is it a dragon? By the way, when you look at the description that God gives here in chapter 41, it's something that we don't know about. Guys, I can remember, I don't know, I guess 33 years ago, which seems hard to imagine, that there were pastors that would stand in pulpits and deny the existence of dinosaurs. They never existed. That's just been 3 decades. And you know what? I bet we could go around and find one today that still says the earth is flat. And that the dinosaurs never existed. Let's accept the reality that there are things, even on this earth, even in the history of creation, that we don't know. We have little suggestions, little glimpses, little hints. But let's accept that we don't know everything. We look at the timeline of the earth. Now, I absolutely believe the earth is 7,000 years or younger. You want to believe it's millions of years old? Okay. I wasn't here. I can't even, you know, even when you put the timeline together in the Bible, there's some disagreement. Let's take a break.